Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
New U.S. sanctions on Iran took effect today, 6 months after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the international nuclear deal.
The sanctions target Iran's shipping, financial, and energy sectors, all key to the country's already struggling economy.
The bombs, which the FBI referred to as improvised explosive devices, were sent to the FBI's bomb laboratory in Quantico, Virginia.
We're in Mexico again tonight as thousands of migrants try to find a faster way to the U.S. border. The White House says it's now getting help from the Mexican.
Breaking news out of Pittsburgh. The man accused in the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh is pleading not guilty, and he also wants a jury trial. He's facing a 44 count.
In the final seconds before the Boeing 737 MAX crashed into the water, it was traveling at more than 500 kilometers an hour. All 189 people on board were killed.
You've now entered the House of Mystery.
Crime, conspiracy, history, and science.
With your hosts, Hal Warren, Mike Brown,
Julie Saff, Michael Butterfield,
Dr. Joseph Usinski, and Michael Hawley.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and we are at the interview part of the show. Joining me to do the interviews, I've got people from around the world. We've got the famous Michael Hawley, who does the Jack the Ripper murders.
Hello.
And he's just washing the blood off his hand now.
A knife.
Yeah, and we've got Brian Turnoff.
I'm tipping my hat to all of you. Thank you very much. Hello, hello.
And yeah, Mind's Eye Podcast. How's that going?
It's going good. Can't complain. But I'm here doing House of Mystery, so let's focus here, number one.
Yeah, because my mind can't see. now, today, I've talked to our guest before, and he's got the book out that he's been talking about doing, finally, and he had Brian Whitney help him out with that. So we've got... Carl De Niro, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me.
So the book is called Son of Sam and Me. Now, I kind of know the story. I kind of know what's going on and everything, but I know a lot of listeners won't know. So first of all, how do you fit into the Son of Sam murders? How did you get involved?
I involuntarily. To say the least,
yeah.
But I was shot on October 23rd, 1976, which turned out to be the second Son of Sam shooting.
Maybe let's set this up. So the Son of Sam is better known now as David Berkowitz, who did get arrested and put in jail. He killed half a dozen people and wounded many, and this was in New York City. In the mid-late 70s. So maybe set the stage of what you were doing that day and how it happened you got shot.
Well, it was 5 days. I had enlisted in the Air Force in a delayed entry program. So I was scheduled to report to Lackland Air Force Base on October 28, 1976. So 5 days before, being a typical 20-year-old, went out with my friends, kind of like the last round of my final goodbyes. We had gone to a party, a house party that really wasn't that good. So we went back to the bar, the local neighborhood bar that we hung out at. And there I ran into a friend, Rosemary Keenan. So we had a few drinks and decided to get away from the maddening crowd. So we got into our car and just drove around the neighborhood that was actually my neighborhood in North Flushing, New York, and came to a spot that looked like a good place to make out. And she pulled over in front of a darkened house, and we started making out. And I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes later, all hell broke loose. At the time, I didn't know that I was shot, but all the windows were blown out. Or the back window, I shouldn't say all the windows, but all, the side window and the back window was blown out, and I had glass shards all over me. Again, I didn't know I was shot, but I knew I was in trouble. And I told her, you know, start the car, get out of here. And we headed back to the bar that we started at, which was about 10 blocks away. I got out of the car, walked into the bar, and basically collapsed. That's when my friends realized that I was in dire need of medical attention, and they drove me to Flushing Memorial Hospital.
So you had no idea. What were you thinking when the back window smashed out? Were you thinking that there was just burglars or somebody was,
well, yeah,
was hassling? Like, what was your thought?
You know, it's kind of weird. I guess the adrenaline kicks in and whatever else. I'm new at this, or I was new at this, and thankfully I still am. But I knew I was in trouble. As I mentioned in the book, being a bit of a smart aleck, I told the cops I threw an ounce of pot out the window on my departure from the shooting scene. So I knew that, I mean, that tells me right there, I knew something was up. But I didn't hear any gunshots, and I didn't think I was shot. And again, I told the doorman at the bar, when I walked in, he said, "You don't look good." And I said, "I don't feel good. I said, I think the car blew up," which obviously makes no sense. But that's what happens when you get a .44 in the back of your head. So about 4 a.m, I got to the hospital around 2:15 in the morning. And about 4 o'clock, a police officer asked me if he wanted to know if he should call my parents. And I asked him what time it was, and he said 4, and I said, "Dad," I said, "No." I said, "As long as I'm home by 7, my mother won't know I was out this late." And that's when he looked at me and said, "Son, you got shot in the head, you're not going home." And that's my first recollection of knowing I was shot.
So when you were shot in the head, so what effect did it have on you, and how long did it take you to recover from that?
I was in the hospital for 3 weeks for the first go round, basically just there was no painkillers except Tylenol, which was not good. Had a throbbing headache and a lot of swelling in the brain. So they were. Every couple of days, the doctors would come in and drain fluid from the back of my head with this huge needle, which, let me tell you, was extremely painful. And that took about, the pain subsided after about 2 weeks. And in the third week, they released me, telling me that I could go home. But I had to stay inside because it was only a thin layer of skin protecting my brain from the outside world. And then 3 months later, January 20th of 77, I was scheduled to go back so they could put a metal plate in the back of my head to cover up the hole that the bullet had made.
So when did you first realize that it was part of the Son of Sam shooting?
My first indication was at a civil hearing that the victims put together. So we went to court, a civil court, to decide the percentages if and when there was any money to be made from David Berkowitz estate. And one of the lawyers, Harry Lipsick, kept saying to the judge, you know, other people are involved. And I had no idea what he was talking about. So I asked my lawyer, and that's when he told me, he goes, oh, you know, Harry Lipsick thinks other people were involved. And it was interesting, but I didn't really think much more of it. And then 7 years later, I read Maury Terry's book, The Ultimate Evil, which is basically the blueprint for the Son of Sam conspiracy. And that was, you know, that was my second piece of information alluding to a conspiracy. And the third piece was I happened to run into a ballistics detective in around 1990 who worked on my case. And he told me that that a woman or a 90-pound weakling shot me. And David Berkowitz is neither one of those. So at that point I was pretty convinced that Maury Terry was onto something.
Maybe explain this. Like, what do you mean by cult? So there's going to be people that this is totally out of left field here. They have no idea. As far as what's been told on news and over the time, is David Berkowitz, you know, had a dog that talked to him. He heard voices, and he would go out and shoot all these people. So now you bring up cult. So what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, like I said, the basis for me even mentioning the cult is the work that Maury Terry did uncovering this cult. There was some clues during the actual shootings. The Son of Sam left a note at one of the shooting scenes, and also sent a note to Jim Breslin, who was a New York Daily News investigative reporter. And in one of the letters, the letter mentions some names, the Wicked King Wicker, the Duke of Death, Duke of Darkness, 22 Disciples of Hell. That really didn't go anywhere during the investigation for various reasons that I'm not even sure why the police didn't follow up on some of those clues.
Are you thinking that David Berkowitz was part of a cult and he was doing things for the cult for a certain reason?
Yeah, I mean, in the Son of Sam letters, the writer, mentioned 22 disciples of hell, which today I certainly believe that David Berkowitz was one of those 22 disciples. Some other people have been identified as the 22 disciples of hell. And, you know, based on the investigation that Maury did and the investigation that myself, Maury, and a few other researchers over the last 30 years, it's quite evident that more than one person was involved. A conspiracy just means it involves more than one person. I know it has bad connotations today, but that's all it means. And as far as the cult, there's more than enough information, specifically from the NYPD, that there was a cult that was active in Untermeyer Park in Yonkers, which is the city that David Berkowitz lived in, and Untermeyer Park is the park that he hung out in.
What's the name of the cult, or do we know, and kind of what exactly was the point of them shooting you and others?
Well, the name of the cult is loosely known as the Children, although during the investigation, the cult really didn't have a name. It was just this, satanic cult that would have rituals in Untermeyer Park, and this is well documented. There's photographs of the altar that they used. There was many German shepherds found skinned and obviously killed. And Jim Rothstein, NYPD detective, actually uncovered the cult long before the Son of Sam shootings, in the late 60s, 68, 69. And he found out that there was this satanic cult that, besides worshiping the devil, they were involved in, major drug dealing and procuring young women. I shouldn't even say women, young girls and young boys, for sexual activity with the rich and famous.
So, Carl, a question: when you got shot, it sounds like it was dark and you saw no one, or did you maybe make out anybody?
Yeah, that's a good question, because of all the shootings, my shooting is basically, I think it's the only one with no eyewitnesses. So there's the least amount of information on my shooting. And ironically, of all the surviving victims, I'm basically the only one that has continued researching it to try to find out what happened, why, who did it, besides Berkowitz and other assorted questions. But no, I didn't see anything.
Do any of your fellow victims, surviving ones, I mean, do they agree with you at all? Have you talked with them? What are their thoughts, or do they believe that it is Berkowitz?
Well, that's a very good question, and I'll give you the best answer. Most of them, almost all of them, don't want to talk about it. And of course, we all handle our own personal tragedies in different ways. So I am not, passing judgment on anyone. That's just kind of like my personality, where, I want to know, and I'm going to ask questions, and I'm going to probably be a little loud and obnoxious about it. But it is kind of interesting that, that none of the other victims, they did speak, obviously, at the time of the shooting, but as the years have gone by, they basically refuse to do interviews. They refuse to talk about it. I've reached out to several of them. And, although I am, friendly with one of the victims, she refuses to speak publicly about the case.
And staying there. What about Rosemary, the person you were, that was your partner in crime and, victimization.
Right.
What does she think about, that thought and you writing this book?
Well, I don't know if I was clear on that, but we weren't, boyfriend, girlfriend. We just kind of hung out in this big group that from Queensborough Community College. And I think we had gone on like maybe two dates. After I got shot, I wasn't allowed to have visitors. And she did visit me a couple times in the first couple of days, but after that there was no visitors, and then we basically lost touch. But I was also friends with her sister, who I reconnected with a couple of years ago, And she tells me that Rosemary refuses to talk about it, even with the family, with her family. So she's certainly not going to talk to me about it.
I'm curious, and how about the police at the time? It sounds like, I mean, it's not the first time, let's say, law enforcement or somebody had a rush to judgment, then they figured they're going to stick to their guns, but it sounds like they were convinced that it was just Berkowitz, or were they mixed? Were there a few that thought possibly?
Well, in my particular case, I guess I should have mentioned this early. The two detectives that were assigned to my case was Detective Blues and Detective Redmond Keenan, who was Rosemary's father. I didn't really think much of it until many, many years later when I started talking to law enforcement personnel, and they told me that's highly irregular, that in a shooting case that they would assign a detective whose daughter was involved in the shooting. It's just kind of weird. I think in the beginning that might have pushed the investigation in the wrong direction because I was 20 years old. I had long brown hair. I was a self-avowed hippie, and I did smoke pot, and I liked to drink. And here's Rosemary's father, the detective. Now his daughter's involved in a shooting, and he wasn't thrilled with me. And they immediately assumed it was a drug deal gone bad, which I assured him it wasn't. But I didn't really convince him. And I was, so basically for the 6 months, I had to defend myself to the police and my mother that it wasn't a drug deal. And I was vindicated on March 10th, 1977, when the mayor of New York City, Abe Beame, and the police commissioner, Codd, announced that we have a serial killer, five random shootings, or seemingly random shootings, were all tied to the same gun. They lost, they lost some time in looking for the culprit and looking for clues that might have helped them. But I'll be honest with you, I don't blame them too much, because there was no son. When I was shot, there was no Son of Sam. There was no serial killer. And I lived in a neighborhood that was very low crimes. It was upper middle class neighborhood. We didn't have shootings. I don't even think we had robberies back then. So they didn't have much to go on. Originally, except for a few visits by the two detectives on my case, I was never contacted by the NYPD. For any follow up or even when they called Berkowitz, I didn't even get a phone call. An official phone call saying, rest easy, we got your man. I found that out through a reporter who called my sister, who then called me. So that was, kind of a strange little thing. But all the information that I had on Berkowitz, I had the same information that the general public had by reading newspapers and listening to the news. I thought it was awfully crazy, the talking dogs and all the crazy stuff that Berkowitz said while he was in the psych ward before he was sentenced. And then since then, he's changed his story like three times. Eventually, he did say he made the whole thing up, and it was, satanic cult, and he's very sorry, and there was no talking dog, and, you could take it for what it's worth. He definitely didn't help. He definitely didn't help himself by changing his story, three or four times. As far as me believing him, I can tell you, like today, here's what I believe. I believe that he did do two of the shootings. I don't think he shot me. I think he was at all the shootings, as he has stated. He says he was, you know, I do know that the police, when they did interrogate him, they asked him, you know, specific questions for each shooting, and you know, those hidden clues that the police will keep from the public. So if they catch, you know, if they catch the suspect, then they ask him a question, and he knows the answer, then they know they got the right guy. I'm not really sure what questions they had for Berkowitz, but at this stage of the game, I just, there would be no upside for Berkowitz to lie and say, I was there, but I didn't shoot you. You know, but I did shoot Donna Loria. You know, it's kind of like, you know, either all in or, you know, or you're not.
You had some actual direct correspondences with him during COVID, and that ended in November, according to the book. Tell us a little bit about those correspondences. Did you gain any insight? And since your last one, anything new come out since then?
Yeah, so I was actually approached by a friend of his who let me know that he was interested in talking to me. I had batted around the idea for quite a few years of reaching out, but I never did. But once I found out that he, you know, he was interested in talking to me, I said, I have nothing to lose with this one. So I started corresponding with him. And, you know, as you can, in the book, I printed some of the letters and, you know, some of my letters and some of his responses. And so far, it's all, you know, all fluff. I mean, he hasn't told me anything. You know, he has apologized profusely for any trouble he's caused me and other victims and our families, which is, you know, all well and good. That's part of the process. You know, and you're sorry, but I don't think it's the whole process. And as the letters progressed, I became a little bit more specific and a little bit more to the point. And, you know, I eventually asked him point blank, you know, do you know who shot me? You know, was, and then the next letter I actually mentioned, I just gave first names, was it Amy? Was it Wendy? And his response was, in a nutshell, his response was, be patient. So that gives me hope, hope for the future that I will continue corresponding with him, and it gives me hope for the future.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
That he will eventually give me some kind of closure.
What are your hopes in writing this book? Like, what did you want people to take away from it?
Originally, I wanted to... my daughter convinced me that I had a story to tell that other people would be interested in. I always thought it was a kind of an interesting story. Just the fact that I'm alive to tell it makes it somewhat interesting. But I didn't really think, my inner circle of friends would certainly enjoy it, but I didn't think other people would. But my daughter convinced me that, I got a good story. My personal experiences, with dealing with being shot. And then I added on to that my relationship with Maury Terry, which, I find it's an interesting relationship. It started out me being like a fan of his book to meeting him, to helping him investigate and also becoming very good friends with him. So that was my original goal. But as I started writing the book, I realized, as you mentioned in this interview, a lot of people for various reasons, their age or their interest, don't know who the Son of Sam is or who David Berkowitz is and, why it matters. So I realized I had to go through each of the shootings. I had to give a background on Son of Sam and I had to go through the shootings. During that process, I kind of felt like I was rewriting Maury Terry's book, which I did not want to do. So that became quite a struggle for me because I needed to tell the shooting stories so the whole story would make sense. But yet, like I said, every time I got into it, I felt like I was just, rewriting The Ultimate Evil. So hopefully I came up with a good balance. I took out many, many pages going into deeper detail in each of the shootings. But like I said, my goal was to tell my story, tell my relationship with Maury, and to present to the public for one of the few times that other people were involved, and here's the reasons why. I think I came up with a good balance in this book.
Did you ever try to contact some of the other shooters, other people involved, any time during writing the book? Or
yeah, no, I have not, and I think you can imagine why. But a few years ago, somebody wanted to do a documentary, and they actually said, "What do you think about walking up to the front door, knocking on the door, and introducing yourself?" And I'm like, "I don't think so. I don't know. I'm not that brave." And you do have to realize that you know, this is, you know, this is my opinion and opinion of a few others. You know, you can't go around accusing people of shooting people without some kind of proof. I think we have ample proof, but it's all circumstantial, and a lot of it's based on research that was corroborated by David Berkowitz, which, as we said earlier, he's not the most reliable. You know, I mean, he could change his story tomorrow.
Question is, is that cult still active, do we know, or is it kind of, they kind of disbanded?
You know, in Maury Terry's book, he kind of says it's the Process Church and the Final Judgment. My opinion on that is, I don't think in its entirety it's the Process Church and the Final Judgment. But I do think, and actually I know, that some members of the Process Church were definitely involved in the Son of Sam shootings, and were part of the 22 Disciples of Hell. You know, I think when you deal with true crime, you have to realize that bad people hang out with bad people. So, you know, that you might not be a card-carrying member of a particular group, but that doesn't mean you pal around with a motorcycle gang that is involved, or a satanic cult that was involved. So to answer your question, are they still around? Well, we all know that the Process Church is now called the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. I mean, this is open, you know, this is public knowledge. Michael Mountain actually gave a, who was one of the founding members of both the Process Church and Best Friends, gave an interview, totally admitting that, yes, it's the same group. But he shrugs everything off with, well, you know, back in the 70s, everyone belonged to cults. We didn't really mean anything. You know, it was just like a way to make money and, you know, to be cool. I don't buy that, but that's his story, and I'm sure he's sticking to it.
So, question about David Berkowitz is, like in with serial offenders, they tend to be having personality disorders like antisocial personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, and so when I was read on David Berkowitz and watched, he seemed to be antisocial, and it kind of like fits that mold. But if it's a part of a cult, that would not be a serial offender issue. That would be a cult thing, a different thing. Has there anybody been, have you ever heard discussion about that with David Berkowitz, trying to find out himself, his personality?
So your question is, does he have a serial killer personality or a cult personality?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
God, that's a good question. Let me think about that. I know he's a follower, you know. I mean, we all know, you know, when you're looking for members to join a cult, for the most part, you're looking for the, you know, disenfranchised, the lonely, you know, possibly even introvert, but, you know, no friends. And the cult leader promises something, you know, eternal life, money, drugs, girls, whatever. Berkowitz definitely fits into that. And, you know, everything I know about him, he definitely fits into that. So
things with serial offenders, one of the most common things is the extreme lack of remorse for what they've done, or complete lack of empathy for their victims.
You are not alone with that. I would say, you know, based on my, not that I've done a study on it, but I administer one, and I belong to two, Son of Sam Facebook groups. And I can tell you, out of the 500 members, I would say it's split 50-50 that, you know, he's born again and he truly is sorry. And there's other ones are saying he's just looking to get out. you know. And I don't know the real answer. My personal opinion is he's sincere, but that's just my personal opinion.
If what you say and what you believe in your heart really is true, you know, a woman shot you, it wasn't Berkowitz, she was part of a cult, a satanic one, they still exist, as you said, that's well documented. Aren't you afraid that coming out with this book could, you know, initiate something else or trigger something new? Aren't you afraid that they may have some retribution for this now?
Good. That's a good question, and I've been asked that quite a few times, and my answer is no. And I probably should be, or maybe I should be, but my thinking is, if you've gotten away with this for 45 years, and someone comes out of the woodwork and writes a book and says you did it, it just seems to me, if you're 65, 70, 71 years old, at this stage of the game, you're much better off just saying, I don't know what he's talking about. He's losing his mind. I have nothing to do with that. As opposed to, you know, getting a gun, putting it in your glove compartment, and driving to New York to shoot me. And again, I hope, I hope I'm right with that assessment. You have to realize that I was 20 when this happened, and the players, almost all the players were 24 to 31 at the time. So, you know, there are the, you know, I mean, Berkowitz is probably one of the younger ones, and he's 67, 68 years old. I was 20, he was 24.
Oh, okay.
So Berkowitz is 68 going on. Yeah, he'll be 69 whenever his birthday is. If you read some of the letters, and believe me, I cringed at as I was typing some of the letters, because I'm generally a nice guy, and I don't want to be mean, but you know, my life is turned upside down because of him and his friends. But I didn't want to be like a total jerk. But when I was rereading the letters, I was like, God, if someone's reading this, they're going to think, like, you know, I made best friends with this guy. And I mean, trust me, we're anything but best friends. I just want answers. And I thought the best way to do it was to just appeal to his humanity, for whatever humanity he has.
So how has writing the book changed you now? Like, did you learn anything new? Did you come out of it with new perspective that you never had before?
Well, I can tell you this. What I learned is writing a book is extremely difficult and exhausting. And partly because of the subject matter. You know, writing about yourself is something I've never done. And I mean, I really don't have any deep, dark secrets, but just writing just personal stuff that you know, or you hope anyway, that, you know, thousands, you know, hundreds of people are going to read, is a little disconcerting. You know, it's not terrible. I don't stay up at night worrying about it. As far as changing my life, not really. I mean, it's something I had to do, something I wanted to do, and I'm extremely glad that I was pushed by my daughter and by my girlfriend to finish it. But I'm glad I'm done.
So now, Carl, you're going to get the bug, and then you're going to turn into a narcissist like us.
Well, that's what everyone's telling me. That's what everyone's telling me. I'm gonna forget about all my friends and, you know, move to Hollywood. That's not gonna happen. I lived there for 2 years. It was trying to come. I left back in '78 and came back in '80. It's funny to get away from the hubbub of Son of Sam. I left New York and went to L.A. again. Not the best location to go to get away. Well, I'll never walk away from the case. And like I said, you know, it really wasn't the goal of the book, but one of my personal goals is to find out exactly what happened and more specifically who shot me. So until I find out the answers to that, I don't see me stopping what I've been doing for the last, 40 years. Who knows? It might turn into another book. It might not. But believe it or not, as old as this case is, and as much research that I've done personally and shared with other people, and vice versa, them sharing with me, I get new information almost every other day. But most of it's nothing earth-shattering. It's just a connection. This guy is related to this person who is related to this person. And, and of course, most of it surrounds Yonkers, which is the epicenter of Son of Sam. My other hidden or personal goal is to find out why the victims were shot, including myself. I do not believe for a second, the law enforcement theory that Berkowitz or anyone else got in a car, drove around for hours waiting for the perfect chance, because if that was it, there would have been shootings every other night. I mean, New York City and the vicinity is, we're walkers. We're not out west. We're not in cars. We're walkers. There's, on any given hour, on any given street, you can find somebody walking down the street. So I would like to know, and who knows if I ever get the answer, but I'd like to know why, how the victims were chosen and why. I have theories on some of them. I could share, mine for sure. I have nothing in my past that has anything to do with, drug sales or satanic worshiping or pedophilia or anything that I know is associated with this group. But as we talked about earlier, the girl I was with, her father was a detective. There could be something there. Unfortunately, Red Keenan is long gone. He passed away in the 80s. So I'll probably never know. With seven different cases, I'm hoping to find some kind of common thread.
Now, quick question then is, I heard that if it's a possibility of an initiation, maybe it could have been opportunistic, just that this is what you have to do at this amount of time or something like that, then that would be the common thread, that it was opportunistic. But it would be interesting to find out more of that for sure.
Yeah. I don't know who I should attribute to, but for lack of a better thing, I'll call it the Maury Terry Son of Sam thing. The theory is that some were definite hits, targets, and some were initiation. And in Maury's opinion, mine fell under the initiation. If you take a look at like the Judy Placido, Sal Lupo shooting at Eliphas, there's a lot of symbolism there, with the Eliphas Levi, who was a satanic figure from the 1800s, and the Eliphas name itself. I forget exactly the tie-in, but if anyone Googles Eliphas, they'll find out there's a lot of satanic stuff, and of course Placida is also a god of, I think, or goddess of futility, or anyway, that's Judy Placido's last name. The fact she lived on Wickham Street, Wicca was mentioned in one of the letters. There's just, I mean, that's just kind of, throwing things against, spitballing, throwing things against the wall and see what sticks. There's not a, you know, there's no hard evidence on that. It's just a lot of assumptions, and you know, boy, isn't this neat. You know,
it's interesting. So, do you think that they stopped killing after the Son of Sam was arrested and all that happened, or do you think they just continued doing what they were doing anyway?
Oh, they, without a doubt, they continue doing what they're doing. That's one of the, that question is one of the favorite questions that law enforcement likes to throw at you or throw at me. And, you know, with the idea of, well, you know, once we arrested Berkowitz, the shooting stopped. Well, that doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out why they stopped. I mean, if you arrest a guy for being the 44 caliber killer, why in God's name would you pick up a 44 caliber and shoot somebody else while he's in jail? That would kind of put the heat right back on you. You know, I know I'm simplifying it, but not really. 18 people, or 13 people have passed away in the 12 months after Berkowitz was arrested. 13 people that were involved in this, and they all met, they all met untimely deaths, you know, brake lines cut, suicide with two bullet wounds, you know, strange stories like that, and of course, you know, you go back to the original, if you believe in the, you know, what was behind the Son of Sam. You know, and the cult and the pedophilia. Well, you know, 20 years ago, you couldn't even really mention that because everyone would just say you're nuts. That doesn't happen. But, you know, in the last 20 years, a lot of things have happened in that arena. You know, I guess starting with, I hate to say it, but starting with, you know, with the priests in the Catholic Church and you know, going right to more recent with, you know, Epstein. You know, this you know, human trafficking and pedophilia is alive. Unfortunately, it's alive and well in the United States and around the world. So no, yeah. So I do believe they're still doing what they do.
I mean, that's a pretty big trail of death that was left behind after Berkowitz was arrested. So you would think that the police would be able to find it. At the time, there wasn't the same statistical pressure as there is now for precincts with POTUS, particularly in New York. So why wouldn't the police want to catch the correct killer?
A lot of stories would have to be rewritten. You know, I'm sure if you're not, I'll tell you, you know, over 300 NYPD personnel got promotions based on the arrest of Berkowitz. A few cops, you know, actually made a career. That was their crowning glory. For right now, it's like, let's sleep in dogs lives, and no pun intended. But, you know, why would you reopen a case when we have a guy in jail? My book is not going to reopen the case. I mean, I wish it was that powerful where it would reopen the case. But there's, in my opinion, there's bigger powers than me, who will never reopen the case for a lot of different reasons. I just touched on the most obvious. You know, it's a closed case. Why reopen it?
So you're pretty much saying, really, that they'll really never capture, or the person that really shot you, in your mind, will never really be brought to justice then?
Well, you know, hope springs eternal. I'm not going to say never, but I think a few things have to happen for the authorities to take it serious. And what comes to mind to me is, you know, somebody who was involved, maybe they never pulled the trigger, but they were at a shooting or two shootings, and they know who the players are, and they get jammed up for something that's more serious than, you know, being at a shooting scene. you know, especially like mine, because it was a murder. You know, statute of limitations probably runs out on attempted murder, you know. And, you know, they trade their information, and then that information could be corroborated by information that myself and some other researchers have, along with Berkowitz's, you know, testimony that is already on the record, that, you know, that's a possibility. But I'm not holding my breath for it. I would like it, but I don't really see it.
Yeah. Well, now, do you have a website yourself now, or where do you say people should go?
Yeah, I will have a website. It should be up, and it's almost done. It's very simple. CarlDenaro.com. My book will be available on it. I have some other things on there that may be of interest in the Son of Sam. And I also, like I said, I'm the admin for the official Maury Terry Ultimate Evil Son of Sam Facebook group. You can always ask for to get into the group, but just give your listeners a fair warning. If you don't have any personal information, you're not getting that. I need to know if you're a real person. I really don't care who you are, but I don't let people in with, you know, with no information and a funny name and a face, you know, a profile picture that changes every 3 weeks. Because we don't need lurkers in the group. We need researchers. This is not an entertainment site.
Yeah. So there you go, Brian. You're not getting in. Well, I know that
sounds very cold, but I'll be honest with you. I have over 300 people waiting to get into the group, and you got to give me a reason to let you in the group. And again, it's got to be more than just your entertainment. If you just want entertainment, then go to CarlDenaro.com and you can be entertained there.
Well, I appreciate it, and we will have your book linked up to our website so people can find it real easy when they listen.
Oh, great.
The book is called Son of Sam and Me. It's the truth about why I wasn't shot by David Berkowitz, and our guest was the author, Carl DeNaro. Thank you for being here.
Okay, thanks for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.